You're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. I am Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson. It's Thursday, December 30th. We're about 48 hours away from the kickoff between Notre Dame and Oklahoma State in the Fiesta Bowl. Some things have happened, guys, since we have gotten down here. Namely, Cam Hart has been was hobbled yesterday at practice, as you guys saw. Blake Fisher, surprisingly, I don't know that we would have seen him had nothing happened to Josh Lugg back in on the campus of Notre Dame. But Blake Fisher moves into the starting lineup ahead of Michael Carmody and Tosh Baker. And those are two pretty good young offensive tackles for Notre Dame, but they're going to be challenged by two pretty good defensive ends from Oklahoma State.
I was really surprised that Fisher was in any position to like play at that high of a level to start. I mean, I think we talked about a number of times, like him even playing in the game felt unrealistic, but I asked Isaiah Foskey about this yesterday and he's like, doesn't feel like there's a drop off. You saw him in spring, you know, he did not say you saw him in spring blocking me to the point that Brian Kelly was wondering, like, where's the pass rush, Isaiah? But
we all were, weren't we?
You know, I mean, you think about how good Isaiah Foskey has been this season, and you look back at spring and fall camp, and it's like you're kind of waiting for Foskey to do something. Maybe Blake Fisher is even better than we thought. But man, two freshman offensive tackles against the number one sack team in the country is that is a hell of a challenge. So it's, you know, Mally and I were talking about this morning a little bit. Like, what's most likely? Notre Dame's offensive line took this quantum leap forward, or Notre Dame's offensive line played a bunch of really bad defenses because they're going to play a great defense on Saturday.
And O'Malley, I thought you made a great point in yesterday's instant analysis. I referred to it in today's Thursday thoughts about it. It's not a matter of technique with Blake Fisher. He is so, for a guy that hasn't really played college football, his technique is so sound and he stays balanced and he keeps his, you know, keeps his weight under his pads. You can throw out all the cliche terms with regard to offensive line plays, really good, but I don't think that that's really what's at play here. It's a very multiple defensive front for Oklahoma State. Tommy Reese has talked about that every time that we've had an opportunity to speak with him. And it's more about confusing an inexperienced freshman who just hasn't seen live bullets on the collegiate level.
Yeah, the things to worry about with Fisher in order, it ends with his ability to take on somebody on the Oklahoma State defense when he knows what's coming. But I think it's communication number one, because Jarrett Patterson, who knows more about Notre Dame's offensive line than I do, told us that number one is communication. So I'm going to go with Jarrett Patterson on that one. That's number one. Talk about why Joe Alt is so good is because of his ability to communicate. Then number two, it's recognition. I mean, Blake Fisher can have something told to him, but something else might happen at the snap, and he's got to recognize it, when to come off a double team and all that. Maybe his wind, you know, his conditioning, because it's game speed, right? I mean, he could be on the exercise bike since his knee was healthy, but it's game speed. He's going to be sucking wind at some point. You would think, unless he's a complete freak of nature, really. And then it gets down to like, well, they have a great defensive end. They have two great defensive ends. One is strong and one is fast. But that's the least of my worries with Blake Fisher. I mean, I worry more about Josh Lugg matched up against a great defensive end than I do Blake Fisher. I would just worry about Blake Fisher missing an assignment, Jack Cohn getting nailed because of it. It's like, I would think Fisher would have 65 better snaps than Lugg, but those five that Lugg recognized something that didn't murder his quarterback might be what matters.
Yeah.
And there sometimes were times you just got to get in the way.
Yeah, make sure you get in the way.
And he's a wide body to do it. There were times where, you know, maybe Lugg knew what to do, but just didn't physically move his feet many times. And Brock Martin, but Colin Oliver is really good. And I know that your insider, Tim, said that he's, you know, more than I think we had said, one trick pony. Now, he would know better than us, I guess, but I'm not sure that I totally believe that. Brock Martin to me is the most complete guy that they have defensive line.
The one trick pony thing coming from you means they're playing Notre Dame now. They're not playing another offensive line. You know what I'm saying? Like, he probably does make plays against worse.
Right. I think, you know, if he's on the field in run situations, I think they can exploit him. That's not his game yet. He hasn't developed that, but it'll be interesting. And let's move on to Cam Hart. I know you guys were surprised to see him hobbled yesterday, and that's a real concern.
Yeah, it looked like kind of a wrap on his right hamstring. And even, you know, he wasn't participating in team drills. And then when they sort of like gathered at midfield to sort of break down practice and move on to the next thing, like he was having a hard time even just moving there. So that was not good. You know, can you get away with Clarence Lewis and Tariq Bracey for one game? Yeah, absolutely. But if there's an ankle turn or you get a stinger in your shoulder, you know, at that point,
now it's Ryan Barnes.
It's Ryan Barnes or Philip Riley. Those were the two corners running with the second team defense when they're out there. And that's not a situation that you would feel good about in Notre Dame.
Well, and how do they handle nickel with Hart out and Bracey having to play corner?
It's got to be a third safety.
It's got to be a third safety too.
It's Ramon. Yeah, so as well as Houston Griffith or DJ Brown, Xavier Watts, Ramon. Yeah, Ramon Henderson. Like, I think they have options there. It's just, it's a third pure corner.
You've
crossed the red line at that point once you put a third pure corner on the field.
Yeah. I think the good news is that they're playing the right good team to have this happen. Like, Oklahoma State wants to run the ball. They want to have 8 and 9 play drives. The issue for Bracey and Lewis will be, you know, can they hold? Do they ever need a sub? I think if you're playing a break, if you're playing North Carolina, Bracey and Lewis would be exhausted during this game, trying to run up and down the field with those receivers, everything that's going on. This is a little bit better situation, but as Pete mentioned, we've seen what happens in big bowl games when somebody goes out at cornerback and you're already down one, and all of a sudden you're like, why is Dante Vaughn out there? And, you know, this isn't quite as bad as...
It wasn't. That's not what we said. We said, oh, my God, Dante Vaughn's out there. I said, O'Malley. I'm nudging him with my elbow. O'Malley.
O'Malley, it's over. The game is over. Yeah, you're right. This is bad. But there is no Justin Ross and Dante Vaughn either. So I really do think Bracey and Lewis hold up. It's just, you know, maybe it's something.
I guess my concern is that Hart would have latched on to Tay Martin.
He's better. I mean, it's not a great it's not a good thing at all. This isn't like a
No. It's not. And then I really think that, you know, Lewis against Jaden Bray, you look at his numbers, he only has 12 catches because he's been hurt. But man, when he plays, he's really, really good. The freshman that Marcus Freeman referred to a week or two ago. So, you know, that's concerning. But we tend to focus on what the concerns are. And I think Oklahoma State has their own concerns. It's their offensive line against Notre Dame's defensive front is in trouble too without their starting center, which we saw, you know, them really struggle to run the football against Baylor, although they do have Jalen Warren back at running back.
I feel like when we look at the stats too, like even they don't like T and Tay Martins don't really jump out at you for modern wide receivers. But then we know how good Kevin Austin is. And if we were writing a preview for somebody else's site, you'd talk about, man, Austin's impossible to cover one-on-one the way he's playing these days. That person would go look at the stats and be like, he is?
Yeah.
But I think
I agree
a little bit with Tay Martin. I think he's a better player than numbers suggest. It's just their offense isn't run through him like modern passing games are.
No, Spencer Sanders, their quarterback, is just so hot cold and often – when it's cold, it is frigid. So with an offensive line without their center, I mean, Notre Dame's defensive line, I would pick them against a good offensive line. I'm not sure Oklahoma State's offensive line is classically good compared to, you know, some of the ones Notre Dame has gone against and beaten up badly this year. So I have a hard time seeing Oklahoma State having a whole ton of offensive success on Saturday. It just, you know, Jalen Warren is a really good college running back, but, you know, he's not Kyren Williams. He is like a bell cow back where, like, his yards per carry is average is not great, but his carries are way up there. He's in the top 20 or top 10 nationally in carries.
Well, there was a 4-game span, Pete, where he averaged like 30 carries a game. And then I don't know if he got banged up at that point, and they started using the other guys. But over the second half of the season, I'm not sure that he had 20 carries in a game. So they used him real heavily early on and then backed away. And I like all the running backs. I think they're all capable. But I agree with you about their offensive line. And now they're without their center. I like their – is it Sill or Sills? I like their guard. But I don't see anybody that really stands out there. So I see a real – this is a – you know, I know a bowl game's anything can change, but this is such a tug of war matchup. I think it's going to be ugly at times. I think there's going to be a bunch of punts. I don't know that it'll look like Clemson in their game last night, where Uiagalelei, what in the world? Who's that imposter wearing that uniform? What in the world's going on? He throws 6-yard passes. I'm changing the subject, but I mean, I'm just like, who is this guy?
Tim texted me. All he does is throw 6-yard passes. Like, that's never been a compliment, honestly. No one's ever complimented a quarterback.
It's like that's the only thing they trust him with. I don't want to veer off too much from that, actually.
I do want to go back to Jalen Warren, though.
Yeah, please do.
Like, he sheds tackles. He makes people miss tackles. Notre Dame is going to have to tackle well, and they usually do. They have been for a long time.
But they do, right?
This guy's 5'9", 220. I mean, coming at you.
You want to measure missed tackles, because I feel like Kyren Williams is always shorted by Pro Football Focus. He had 58 missed tackles forced. It seems like he had 12 a game, so I'm not sure how that's possible. But Jalen Warren had 76 missed tackles forced to Kyren Williams' 58. Think how many guys Kyren Williams made miss or ran through. So even if you're just, let's pretend they shorted Kyren Williams by 20. Well, then they're even.
Well, and I don't have the stats right here in front of me. Warren has more carries.
He does,
I don't know how
like,
many more.
It's only like 18.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I don't remember what it was. 235, 204 rushes. I mean, it's just, I guess my point is he's harder to tackle than we're giving him credit for. And Notre Dame wouldn't be playing Oklahoma State if he played in the Big 12 championship game.
Hey, let me veer off here because the second segment, we got a bunch of questions about the game. It took until 2 days beforehand to get the questions.
You've been pleading for these questions.
I know. Priest. I know. We got a bunch. But I want to finish up segment one with some conversation about guys leaving and staying. It's my understanding the five players that were granted, NFL evaluations were Kyren Williams, of course, Isaiah Foskey, Jason Adamolola, Jarrett Patterson, and Kevin Austin. And just what your guys' thoughts are on those five situations at this point. Because mine have, I mean, you know, there's kind of an ebb and flow. There's an ebb and flow with how information comes to us. But I think Jarrett Patterson is the one that is probably the most conflicted at this point.
Kevin Austin too. Yeah.
I get it's, hopefully this doesn't sound pessimistic, but like, if you're just like, what's your best guess today? Like Austin will leave. Like Patterson will leave. Like Adamolola will return. And Williams has already left. And then Foskey to me is the one that I'm, I think, least certain about whether he stays or goes. I don't have a good feeling on that one.
I would like to think that self-awareness is going to come into play with Isaiah Foskey. I mean, not that he couldn't enter the NFL now. I this is the way I wrote today. I mean, I think he's a third round draft choice today, maybe second, but if he plays another year, it could be second to first.
I think even self-awareness, maybe just intelligence is the thing. He will listen to someone that says, Isaiah, this is the money you will make if you go now. This is the money you can make if you go next year. He seems like the guy that also wants a reason to return a little bit. I think anybody else on this list, if you said, hey, guys, second round pick, give it a shot, or try to come back next year and be first round, they'll be like, see you later.
He hasn't played that much college football.
Yeah, I feel like,
you know, that's the thing that he.
You're right. I could come back and I could do better. I could. He's the one, I think, on this group.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, Bo Bauer, I guess I probably should have addressed him in my Thursday thoughts and I didn't. We'll see about that. But those are the five. Those are the five that asked for evaluations.
Bo Bauer supposedly is returning. This is secondhand information. But it's good secondhand information from the source that told me who they heard it from. It's would know Bo Bauer very, very, very well, extremely well for his whole life.
Noted. All right, we got Pete. Anything more you want to add on that?
No, I think a month ago we were hopeful that Patterson was going to return, and it seems like that is leaning more in the opposite direction now. Which is I get it. Like centers only go so high, but I do think that the possibility of coming back and learning from Notre Dame's new offensive line coach would probably enhance his stature as a bona fide NFL center long haul.
You can imagine how that part of being coached by Harry Hiestand for a year will be strongly pushed here in the next few days.
I would think, and I mean, speaking of being logical, once you sit down and think of every option that can help you coming back, it's unless, I mean, you never, I mean, he's a graduate at Notre Dame. He's played college football for 3 years, 4 years. I mean, but he's been involved for 3 years as a starter. He's had an injury. Maybe he doesn't want another injury at the college level before he starts getting paid.
Well, I think that's a huge, I think that's a significant part of it because, yeah. You know, he recovered from the Liz Frank injury. That's what he had, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Incredibly well. I mean, incredibly well for that kind of injury for a big guy, for a 300 pounder. So, you know, I mean, I think that comes into play.
I think you've heard this too with him. It's like he played, like that injury was not totally in the rearview mirror this year. Like, he played pain.
No doubt.
You know,
about
so it's like
that's part
to think
of it.
Think about like holy cow, it's you know, we're more than a year on from that, and you still feel some discomfort from that. Or, you know, Kevin Austin with his, you know, the fifth metatarsal injury, which broke twice. Like
right.
We just put that in the back on the back burner. We just kind of forgot about that as the season went
yeah,
on.
But that all of that stuff is just like those are real evaluations and real decisions to make if you've had an injury.
We should add this before we go to the second segment on the Liz Frank. Jerron Jones said, like, that Liz Frank injury bothered me the rest of my career.
Yeah.
Carrying my ACL was nothing compared to having that injury.
That may be what Patterson's dealing with. That may be what Patterson's dealing with, too. All right. Coming back, segment two, burning up the boards.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.
Segment two, burning up the boards. And we start with a question from SD Irish fan. Where will the Notre Dame offense try to exploit the Oklahoma State defense? And where do you see Oklahoma State trying to exploit the Notre Dame defense?
Regarding the Notre Dame offense, I want to kind of take a page from listening to the players and Tommy Rees. They mentioned how well-versed Oklahoma State's defense is working as a unit, how big their secondary is, how quickly you have to get the ball out. And then they all mentioned, so we have to be taking our, we have to take our shots. We have to take our shots. I think it's Jack Cohn's one, you know, hurry up and throw Jack 1-2-3. Someone coined that, I believe it was Douglas Farmer, hurry up Jack, throw. I think the shot downfield is how to score, though, because a couple of shots downfield is going to help. I don't love Notre Dame driving 12 plays and it culminating in a touchdown all the time against Oklahoma State.
I think that the answer is the same for both. The shot play, because yeah. I don't think Oklahoma State's going to drive the ball efficiently against Notre Dame either, but I could see them throwing over the top a few times. And it may just come down to who makes those 50-50 catches the best. Like if Notre Dame makes four of them and Oklahoma State makes one, then Notre Dame wins the game. But if it's flipped, then you know the inverse is probably true.
Oklahoma State is not a big play offense. I mean,
I don't think they're going to drive. I agree. They love 8-9 play.
No, I agree. That's why this could be a 16-10 game. I mean, I don't think it will. I think things will loosen up at certain points and there'll be some points scored, but I agree. I mean, Notre Dame is more of a deep ball threat than Oklahoma State is, at least statistically. Tay Martin, as good as he is, his longest reception is 37 yards.
Yeah, if you look at the passing charts, like Cone downfield, it's not even close. You know, people are really mad at Ian Book wouldn't take shots downfield. Oklahoma State does not take enough shots downfield. But if you're now going against, I know they haven't had Kyle Hamilton in 2 months, but you're missing Kyle Hamilton. You're missing your two best players in the secondary for Notre Dame. What would you do if you're Oklahoma State's offensive coordinator? Right? This is
Cam Chuck Martin. It.
No
Cam
doubt.
Number two. Kyle Hamilton's number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then Cam Hart is next in terms of the secondary. I'll be taking my shots at Clarence Lewis.
Yeah.
Houston Griffith down the seam. I mean, for crying out loud, we've been waiting for this moment. This is his moment to go up and make a play, right?
So, I mean, I agree with what you guys are saying. I think that that's ultimately – well, and Baylor had some, you know, in a Big 12 championship game, they had some downfield success in the first half. Now that was then they pitched a shutout against them, you know, which can happen. I think I've mentioned before that Oklahoma State had a couple games early in the season where they had back-to-back second halves where they didn't score a point. So, you know, That's and they could have lost. You know, we look at, you can say Notre Dame could have lost the Toledo game. Well, I can guarantee you that Oklahoma State could have lost a Boise State game.
Yeah.
Jason Taylor got a hand on a field goal that would have put, I don't know how much time was left off the top of my head, but you know, so they had games where they certainly could have lost as well. But this is going to be hard for the offenses. You're going to have to make a big play. And I think in terms of big plays, Notre Dame is a little bit further advanced offensively than Oklahoma State.
Next question is quite pessimistic from Michael 7258. How many failed series will Jack Cohn have before Tyler Buchner is inserted?
Did you interpret it that way? As I did. Pessimistic?
I did.
Everybody wants to know the difference between, you know, Kelly or Reese with Kelly, Reese without Kelly. We may have another question on that, but when they would put the camera on the sideline when Notre Dame had the football, and they put the camera on Brian Kelly, did you see him talking? Like, did you see him communicating a whole bunch with Tommy Reese, or did he stand there stoically and allow Tommy Reese to call plays? I mean, in order for Brian, and I realize that he can dictate a lot of the stuff that goes on during the week, but how many times did you see Brian Kelly really animated and talking with Tommy Reese when Notre Dame's offense was on the field? Well, if he's not doing that, how is it not Tommy Reese making the decisions? The vast majority of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, he's on the headset with Reese. So, you know, when the defense is on the field, I'm sure he's talking to Reese quite a bit, I would think. But I guess I just don't think there's going to be some huge change here, you know, because Kelly's not there. You're not going to – if the point of the question is, was Kelly the reason that Cohn started and Buchner didn't play more? No. Like, Reese is the reason for that. You know, that's Reese's call. You hear Reese talk about Jack Cohn. I don't know if people just are not, they selectively like black out when Reese compliments Cohn, but
that's what happens to me. They selectively black out Reese.
Because it's like people didn't, did you hear Reese say like he thinks Cohn's going to be on an NFL roster? Like, you know, that Cohn has overperformed all their expectations, that he's been a great leader, great teammate, diagnostically, can read a defense and understand Notre Dame's playbook at a high, high level. Like,
right. And then
things are true.
Right. And when he wasn't playing, he was a great teammate. He was everything other than mobile.
I agree. Other than mobile.
Which
I
is agree. Pretty, pretty big thing.
To the point of the question, though, I mean, I agree with everything you said, but I believe with self-scouting and Oklahoma State scouting, this is all Tommy Reese. And if Tyler Buchner's healthy, Reese will want to include the Buchner package early enough where he can see how Oklahoma State reacts to it. And then he already has a plan for how they react to it the next time Tyler Buchner comes in. So I think Buchner will be involved. Like, Buchner sometimes was not involved in the first quarter at all.
Right.
I think he'll show up in a position of success so Reese can see what Tyler Buchner does to their defense. And then he already has his plan for that later.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to see more of Tyler Buchner, not because now it's all Tommy Reese's decision. I think as you've had a month to prepare for it, you need him. What he brings to the equation against Oklahoma State's defense. So I think all that points to more Tyler Buchner and not specifically because Brian Kelly's not going to be on the sideline on Saturday. So we'll see. I think you need both, though. You need both, and I think there's more to explore with Buchner in this game because of the preparation time that you've had for it.
Quick yes or no: when Tyler Buchner goes in the game on Saturday, will it be because the offense is struggling, or because Notre Dame wants to get Buchner in the game, you know, from a position of strength? I think the latter.
I would like to think it will be the latter. I agree.
I think it's game planning for the latter too. Like,
right.
Tommy Reese is looking ahead to just other than Tyler Buchner's first series in this game. He is a smart guy, and he knows this game is not going to be 41-7, and he's going to have to find something in the second half to either pull away by two touchdowns or break a tie in this game, and Tyler Buchner's going to be part of it. I don't think that's any question. And if Tyler Buchner tweaked anything we don't know about, then Jack Cohn's playing the whole game because Tyler Buchner's not going to help you if he tweaked.
Yeah. All right, moving on to a question from Ever to Excel. Would you please explain what's going on at wide receiver coach? Feels odd and awkward for everyone involved that it's hanging out there as an uncertainty whether the job opens up or not. What dynamics are in play that Marcus Freeman and company don't yet know whether to retain or jettison Dell Alexander?
Pete, you handle the latter part of that question first, but I want to say that in bowl preparation, Jeff Quinn and Dell Alexander staying was by far the best thing for this team to beat the Oklahoma State defense. Myopic focus, win this game. Keeping those guys involved was seamless. It was better for the players. It was better for the coaching staff that lost its head coach. That has nothing to do with the future, but it, I really think that mattered in December.
I agree. I think this is mostly a question of, I think it's less about Notre Dame isn't sure what it wants to do and more about we don't know what Notre Dame is going to do. Whereas I think the other positions we've had a much better bead on the guys they're interested in, the timelines for moving. Again, two of them were open anyway, so there's not a hesitancy there. So I don't, you know, Marcus Freeman, my understanding, has spent time this week talking to coaching staff candidates, figuring out, you know, where he wants to go. But he's also trying to be coached for the first time. You know, he's got all this to handle down here in Arizona. So I don't know. I don't consider it to be awkward at all. I just consider it to be, this is college football. Coaches, assistant coaches come and go all the time.
Yeah, I think that's just a perception because people want a change at the receiver position. It's easier to speculate about a Harry Heistand because he's not coaching football right now. You know, so as far as why, I do think that there is respect from Tommy Reese with regard to Dell Alexander as a receivers coach. What has happened in recruiting, however, cannot be overlooked. And I know that they're involved with some wide receiver coaches, but I think that predominantly the ones that they're involved with still have a football game to still play. So, you know, a lot of that information isn't going to spill out like it would with, say, a Heistand who is not coaching a football game right now. So I know that they respect Alexander as a receivers coach. We said months ago that we thought that they would change the offensive line coach and the wide receiver coach. We know for a fact they're doing that with the offensive line coach. And I think what we said will stand true when all is said and done.
To the one last point to his question, I guess the way he worded it, he has a very good point, Ever to Excel, that Notre Dame has four players with a decision to make whether to return to that position or not. And they don't know who their coach is. So if he was getting to the awkward stage of that, that could feel awkward.
Yeah.
For guys that are deciding what to do with their future and they don't know who the coach would be. Good point. W. Oosterhoff, with Mike Elston calling the defense, do you think this is his game interview for the coordinator's job like it was for Tommy Reese a couple years ago?
I think it's different. I mean, I think Brian Kelly knew Tommy Reese was going to be his offensive coordinator.
After the nationwide search, he was pretty
sure. Yeah. No, I think he knew. And you know, I mean, he knows Tommy Reese about as well as anyone. And he felt like he was going to be a good offensive coordinator. And we've expressed our opinions about that in the past. I don't think that this is a similar situation audition wise. I still think that he will get, Marcus Freeman will hire a different defensive coordinator. I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I don't think it's the same situation that Tommy Reese was faced with 2 years ago.
I agree with all that. I would have, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, the idea of Mike Elston being promoted to defensive coordinator, I would have been really surprised based on hearing about how Marcus wanted to go outside and find a DC. But talking to sources this week, I would be a lot less surprised if Elston was promoted and they hired a linebackers coach instead.
Yeah. I on one hand, I'm saying it's not an audition, but they go into this game and Marcus Freeman finds out that he's in lockstep with the decisions that Mike Elston made.
Yeah.
Along
everything
the way.
Counts.
Certainly.
Like, I mean, let's say Notre Dame returns two kickoffs for touchdowns. Like Nick Lisinski is like, all right, well, you're the new special teams coach.
All right, you're the new linebackers coach. You're never going to coach special teams again.
Thank you, Chris Tyree, for my raise. This is wonderful.
Yeah. You know, they love Lisinski, and so that comes into play as well. He is such an asset to the program as a non-full-time you know, assistant coach per se. So I don't know. We can't answer questions before decisions have been made sometimes. And I think that a couple of these are still with moving parts as they go into the Fiesta Bowl. Question from Bill ND22. A comment was made recently. Maybe you should be asking this, Tim, because I'm the one that made this comment. But a comment was made recently that Kevin Austin, quote, is looking for reasons not to return, unquote, or something similar. Can this be explained a bit more? So let me just go ahead and say that, Kevin Austin, think about what Kevin Austin has gone through at Notre Dame. I mean, it's been a rough ride at Notre Dame, and it's difficult to be a student athlete at Notre Dame many times, especially a football player. And it's difficult for some more than others, just for whatever, a variety of reasons and who you are as a person and makeup and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think coming back to Notre Dame for a fifth year is tough for Kevin Austin. It's been a tough 4 years, and I just think that it's a difficult decision for him to say, okay, yeah, I'll just come back to Notre Dame for a fifth year.
I'll give you a rundown of what Kevin Austin has been through.
I mean, yeah, dude, please
obviously
do.
Obviously, a great deal of it is self-inflicted, but not all of it. 2018, near the end of the year, he was suspended for a couple of games. 2019, he was known to be suspended for 4 games by us in the spring, and then that got worse, and he was suspended for the entire season, which means something happened after his purported 4-game suspension. 2020, and his dramatic return after the one famous practice of March 5th where Pete Sampson and I couldn't stop talking about him for 6 months. He breaks his foot in July, comes back without surgery too fast, and breaks it again and misses an entire season. Fall 2021, September, Notre Dame's offense stinks and can't throw the ball to Kevin Austin, and he's a senior with no resume whatsoever to go anywhere. If you remember how we talked about Kevin Austin after the Cincinnati game. Totally removed from the game by Sauce Gardner. No stats to show for anything since the Florida State game, really. He made a leaping catch against Toledo. Now everything has changed. Kevin Austin's playing great football against defenses that can't run with him. He has a Notre Dame degree.
That's what I was going to throw in there. That's
key. He has a concern about re-injury because if he gets hurt again, shouldn't he be getting paid when he gets hurt again?
Yes. It's, you know, it's not the same, but it's similar to like the idea that, well, shouldn't Jalen Smith come back and rehab at Notre Dame? No, he should get paid to rehab with the Dallas Cowboys. That I get it if you're going to take a chance on yourself if you're Kevin Austin. I think that logically it makes sense to return instead of having half a season of good tape. You come back and have a full season of good tape, including against some good corners that you're going to play against next season. You know, have a game where you went out and beat a Sauce Gardner or a Kobe Bryant. He didn't have that this year. So I think it makes sense for him to come back, but I can understand why after 4 years and getting a degree that you would want to just move on and do the next thing. It's, you know, I think we don't know nearly as much as sometimes people think that we do about like what's inside these kids' heads, you know, like sometimes you're just ready to do something else. And I totally get it. Like, I understand why you're just ready for a new challenge, even if like we can sit back here logically and like move pieces around and talk about contract values and yada, yada, you're just ready for a new challenge.
Well, and his would be a fifth year. There's got, you know, often this is right, because exactly. COVID, people are debating about a sixth year. I mean, did you want to be in college for 6 years?
Well, we were getting questions last year about, do you think Ian Book should come back for a 6-year? And they're like, no, he's ready to do something else. Yeah. And I get it. When you're ready to do something else, it's best to go do something else.
And I think I was just trying to get in playing devil's advocate with Kevin Austin, because I think he could actually do what you said, Pete, come back, make some money by coming back. But if he's just over it, he's over it. I think we talked to Braden Lindsay. I've never left an interview thinking to myself, if you said to me, you think Lindsay's going to come back? Sure. Do you think Lindsay's going to leave? Yeah. At the exact same time. Like, it was just, he wants a master's degree at some point. He could get a master's degree in California. Or he's been through so much at Notre Dame, he could get a master's degree at Notre Dame at the Mendoza College of Business. And he mentioned Tom Mendoza in our interview. Or he might like the warm weather because he hates the cold weather of South Bend. It is literally like,
he could go back to the state of Oregon if you wanted to and play some top-notch football.
It's really interesting. Yeah. Guys like that. You don't know.
Question, long question here from Icy Gold. In the 2019 Camping World Bowl, the Notre Dame media hyped a plucky Iowa State team from the Big 12. Notre Dame shut down that offense, which had more talent than this Oklahoma State team, and the game wasn't close. Is it possible the media is once again giving too much respect to a team that stood out in an otherwise awful Big 12 conference? Notre Dame clearly has a superior overall talent and are motivated from missing out on the playoffs and having their coach walk out on the team.
I think
the motivation is totally different from 2 years ago from Notre Dame's point of view.
That's the point we should make. There might have been other media touting plucky Iowa State. This media here, the three of us, were touting Notre Dame didn't want to be there preparing for the bowl game because that's what everybody was telling their parents and everybody else that would listen. Ours was a case of motivation, we thought. I mean, Notre Dame's better than Iowa State, but if you don't want to be there, what's going to happen? You know, well, it turns out they wanted to be there for 60 minutes on game day. Just fine.
That was enough.
But it wasn't like we looked at that game, analyzed everything, broke it down and said, man, there's no way they're stopping these guys, Iowa State. Oklahoma State, we're looking at their defense and thinking, there's a matchup here that Oklahoma State has a definitive advantage on, and it's the most important matchup in games. Defensive line over offensive line.
Yeah. You know, I would say that, I mean, I get it. And we hyped Iowa State. We all did. I did too. I picked Notre Dame to win and cover ultimately, but we hyped Iowa State. But I would simply say this, watch the film. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to what do we see on film? And Oklahoma State's defense is really, really good. It's legit. You can talk about Big 12. You can talk about Iowa State. Their defense is really good. Their offense, you know, again, we're talking about a very, very low scoring game. So we're giving Notre Dame's defense credit for being able to shut down Oklahoma State's offense. But, you know, and let's talk about motivation. I mean, Mike Gundy is a 17-year coach in the 16th bowl with a 10-5 record, and they're playing Notre Dame for the first time in the history of the program. You think they're motivated? They're motivated too. They're really motivated. They have an opportunity to beat the University of Notre Dame, and they've never played them.
It's interesting listening to some of their Zoom calls because the Oklahoma State players are getting questions about, you know, getting over the Baylor game and missing the playoff. And Notre Dame is not getting any of those questions, even though Notre Dame is ranked higher and was essentially just as close to the playoff as Oklahoma State, maybe off by one spot. So I don't know if there's some text there that, you know, you mentioned Oklahoma State's motivated to play Notre Dame. I think that's true. I do also wonder if Oklahoma State is like, we should be in the playoff right now.
That's why I said, I thought if Notre Dame had played Oklahoma State the week after the Big 12 championship, huge advantage Notre Dame. But I mean, that was a lifetime ago. in the life of a football player. I mean,
bowl games rare. Like, how many bowl games do we need to watch to know, like, they rarely make sense. You know, and there's always games you're just like, how did Maryland beat Virginia Tech like 72-3? That doesn't make any sense. There are bowl games like that all the time. I thought that the Camping World Bowl was going to be one of those games. We're just like, wow, Notre Dame was way better, but they were just flat in the game. Didn't happen. They destroyed them. But I'm with Priest. Yeah. Priester is like, you're right on. I think Oklahoma State is just, they're good. Like, I'm not saying they're world beaters. They're not, this isn't like Georgia, but they're a good team and Notre Dame's a good team. So one good team is going to win the game.
The line opened at either 2 or 2.5 and it's never moved, which means the Sharps don't know. They don't know. They're not definitive one way or another. The over under is 45, which means it's going to be low scoring. And when it's low scoring, it's usually close. And when it's usually close, that means either team can win the game.
I would like to point out, Tim, that if Notre Dame played Oklahoma State a week after the Big 12 championship game, there would have been a combined 400 procedure penalties on the two teams because Notre Dame didn't have a coach and Oklahoma State was miserably sad. So that would have gone. That would have been a really weird game to watch, I think.
Yeah. Question from Murphy324. With the loss of two starters, how will you judge Marcus Freeman's shift to a more competitive, quote, good on good, unquote, injury prone bowl prep? I included this question because I think it's kind of fair to ask it.
Do you?
I do from the standpoint, how did Drew White get hurt
Well, that was because of...
That was scout team on good, though.
Right. It was, and it was an overly aggressive scout team
by
being put in a position to go to great lengths to challenge the starting defense, and there was an injury involved. That's why I'm bringing that up, because good on good is great, and it's tremendous, but it does lead to injuries at times. That's why it's a real balancing act.
I have to side with, when you're a top program, the iron sharpens iron thing we've heard for 10 years under Kelly, 12 years. If you have enough players, you should be going at each other. Competitiveness. I don't mean the scout team getting under a defense's skin so much that there's a problem on the field and bad things result. But I don't blame. You need to get back into it after 2 weeks.
Yeah, we don't know how Cam hurt.
No, exactly.
He pulled a hamstring. I mean, that doesn't mean
just feel like you can, I don't think you can protect him for a month. I think you protect him during the season because there's a grind. At some point, you had to start going at it. Backups can hurt starters too.
He had an injury all year. It gave out.
Right.
I don't know if that has a ton to do with the good on good. And it's just like the players talk about how they like the practice tempo or they like the competitive aspect of it. I realize you don't want your players setting your practice schedules, but if you want them to be really engaged and locked in, have them have an enjoyable experience. And that's what's happened down here, I believe.
Here's an indelicate way to put it for a football coach. I would rather have my 22 guys sharp as hell because of how we practiced, and the sacrifices I lost two guys to injury.
I agree, and I'm not pointing fingers. I just thought, when I think back to what happened to their starting inside linebacker, it's like, okay, that's a fair question. But again, Lug got hurt because he planted and it gave out. We don't know. I mean, hamstrings can happen.
Yeah, could have been a non-contact.
You can go at 75%. You can hurt a hamstring. But I thought Murphy 324 had a legit question. CMU Pens fan, most likely to be Fiesta Bowl MVP, Jack Cohn, Isaiah Foskey, or Logan Diggs?
Well, I will tell you that since the media votes in a hurried manner with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it's always the quarterback. So by that virtue, it's Jack Cohn, whether he would deserve it or not.
All right, I don't think the question is that's what he meant. Vein, but I got
that's you. Not that what he meant. let's put it this way. EJ Manuel was the MVP of that game when Florida State beat Notre Dame, and LaMarcus Joyner intercepted about 16 passes. So I'm just going to go ahead and say the quarterback gets it. I would say Cohn still. After all that, I still say Cohn because I have limited options in front of me.
I would too. There's too much of a quarterback bias. Even though I have a vote on the MVP, and in theory I could buck against that. I think I'm going to end up writing down Jack Cohn.
Okay, think of this, guys. Who do we vote for? Well, we paid attention to the game, so this doesn't count. So LSU, Tavon Coney, if people recall, had just an amazing football game as a true junior.
Yes.
And it was a slugfest in the rain. The game stunk for a long time. And we all wrote in Tavon Coney. And then Miles Boykin made the catch of a lifetime and like, give me that ballot back, right? Cross it out. And you just put down Miles Boykin.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how these things often go.
I want to go back to an old topic, an old bet that we had of what was going to happen first. Logan Diggs, 100 yards, or Deion Colsey, a touchdown. Logan Diggs going against this defense. How do you feel? Luck.
It's next year. It goes to next year. It's fine.
I know, but there's only one game left here this year. And what's more likely, a Colsey touchdown or Diggs going for 100? I mean, if Diggs goes for 100, Notre Dame wins, and certainly that could happen.
You know what I'm saying, at this point. It's a one-play chance. I'm going to go back with Brady.
This is where it'd be a Colsey touchdown game.
this is certainly the Colsey touchdown game. That's a good point. So, by the way, you just gave Logan Diggs his first 150-yard game to him by talking about how he couldn't get to
100. I hope so. I'm hoping so. Go ahead, Tim.
Isaiah Foskey. So, defense.
Oh yeah, Foskey. Yeah.
Let's say people vote because they've really studied the game while they're watching it. I feel like they're game planning for Foskey, and other people will have really good games because of it. I think that the word is out. This is the guy we got to make sure doesn't destroy our game. Right? Is that fair with Isaiah?
Well, Foskey? Plus, and for a defensive end to be an MVP of a game, this guy, he's got to force two turnovers, one that leads to the game-winning touchdown, or is a scoop scoop and score. So it's a lot harder for DN to win that MVP in a bowl game.
Next from Irish Cowboy 88, do you expect a different game plan and or offensive philosophy from Reese now that's his offense? If not in this game, how about next season? I like that second part of that question.
Yeah, we already kind of touched upon this. I think it'll be more interesting next year. Tommy Reese, he even said it the other day, I think, and he's right. He's just not throwing stuff out there to deceive people. You're going to dance with what brought you at this point. You got to be fair to your players. Well, you got to give them a completely different offensive game plan from what they were accustomed to during the season. You tweak it here and there, and you add this and take that out. But I think it'd be more interesting next year when you have the personnel change. I think he's done a pretty good job in his 2 years as a coordinator of ultimately adapting to the personnel that he had, which was varied from 2020 to 2021.
It would be bizarre if, you know, they didn't change next year when the quarterback is the Buckner essentially all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why the second part was good.
So, but doing it, I think the way I'd describe it, I think like the echo of Brian Kelly will be very much part of what Notre Dame does against Oklahoma State. Because I don't think what they're going to do this weekend is going to feel very different to the players, to the coaches, than what they did for the previous 12 games.
This is our last question, and we go into predictions. You covered a game. You guys covered a Fiesta Bowl in Tempe, right?
I've covered two. Yeah.
Okay.
So, one in Tempe, one in Glendale.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry, Andy. Maybe I should ask the question so everybody knows what the hell we're talking about. ND615, was the Fiesta Bowl better when it was in Tempe as opposed to Glendale? I loved the Tempe.
I loved
Arizona State. The setting there, it had such a collegiate feel to it.
Yeah. I like the mountains right around you.
Yeah, I really think that's a cool place. But what's your perspective on that?
Which one did you get to stay at the Camelback Inn for? Oh, both. So I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other to me. As I look out the window of my hotel room at the orange tree and my patio, and I see Camelback Mountain across the street, I have a hard time thinking too much about Tempe versus Glendale.
So how about this? Here I am. I'm here 6 years later.
This is crazy.
I am in the exact same room as I was 6 years ago.
And it's relevant because of your patio.
It is. The most frustrating part of it is that there's this beautiful patio. It's warmer than it was 6 years ago. And I can't smoke my cigars anymore. So that's, I'm a little sad here this week at Camelback Inn, but still a pretty good setting.
I have some recollection of Tempe Fiesta Bowls and Glendale. Glendale, I remember a dank, dark place where this angry despot character named Urban Meyer unleashed his kickoff coverage team on Notre Dame, and there was no hope of getting to the 9-yard line, and Notre Dame couldn't possibly win the game. So I didn't like that day. Bob Elliott asking Matt Freeman and I if we wanted to suit up because they were so badly injured while we were watching on the sideline, and thinking to myself, kind of wish we should put some money on Ohio State.
They actually competed when you consider who was absent that day from Notre Dame's.
Crazy. They had no business being in that game.
Really, they really didn't. And ultimately they weren't.
And then there's Tempe, which is the best scenery in the world when you're watching a football game. And they gave us a beer after the game. So
I didn't remember that, but Sun Devil Stadium was a really cool college setting, I thought. All right, guys, let's wrap up with your predictions for the Fiesta Bowl.
All right, I'll go first so I can steal O'Malley's before O'Malley steals mine.
I'm done real fast so you can see it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had Notre Dame 23-20. I think that low scoring game. Yes, low scoring game. I go 23 because Notre Dame getting to three touchdowns feels. I'm more confident that they would score two touchdowns and kick three field goals than score three touchdowns and kick one field goal. So that's how I got to 23 points.
I certainly
but I think
that
it'll be a really good game.
So I considered all that because I don't know if people read the recent preview with Jack Cohn and Tyler Buckner. My question was, can Notre Dame get to three touchdowns offensively? And it's relevant because they haven't lost a game where they scored three offensive touchdowns since 2016.
Oh, wow.
All of their losses, is it just nine? I think nine. Since then, they have not made it to three offensive touchdowns. Or, well, and in fairness, three touchdowns of any type. So I have Notre Dame 24-20, and I was also 23-20, just like Pete Sampson, two touchdowns and three field goals, until I thought there is one thing that is going to happen differently, is that Tommy Reese is going to want to go for it on fourth down to try to get a touchdown on the board, knowing that can cripple Oklahoma State rather than settling for field goals. Because Notre Dame's defense is better than Oklahoma State's offense too. So my only thing was, I think Reese will put it a little more aggressively once he's in plus territory. I don't mean when he's go for it on fourth down when he's on the other side of the 50, but I just think he will think, we can get this. We have Michael Mayer and Kevin Austin.
So like a Virginia situation where they're about to kick a field goal, they call timeout. Pretty sure Reese talked Kelly into going for it.
Yeah.
Reese should be able to talk Freeman into going for it as well.
Yes, I think he will be able to do that as well. So that was why I went at three touchdowns, and I also want to be able to use that stat after the game, so I'm willing it into existence for anybody out there.
I find this game to be very, very difficult to pick, and the Irish Illustrated subscribers will, if they choose to listen to it, will find out that the Fighting Irish preview that I do I've been doing for 25 years with Phil Houck for the station in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I picked Oklahoma State to win 23-20. But I've always said, and especially this week, because that pick had to be made on Tuesday. And I really don't, I'm not smart enough or confident enough in my pick to really make my final pick until the day before the game. And so I'm not sure which way I'm going to go. What concerns me is the Notre Dame offensive line matchup against the defensive front and the attrition. I mean, we're talking now about Notre Dame playing a very good football team without Kyren Williams and Kyle Hamilton, who we knew wasn't going to play anyway. And now you add Cam Hart, their best cover man at corner. Now you add the starting right tackle. Everybody loves Blake Fisher, but it's still the guy that was a 20-game starter. So ultimately, my pick comes down to what I pick on Friday for Irish Illustrated. And I don't know what I'm going to do, because I really think that this game is extremely difficult to pick, and I think that Oklahoma State is capable of winning. However, one more caveat. I do think that Notre Dame is more likely to score three touchdowns than Oklahoma State is.
Yeah, that's kind of, I go there too. I was actually going to ask the question, which would surprise you more if Notre Dame doesn't get to that 20-23 or if Oklahoma State doesn't? I'd be surprised if Notre Dame can't get to 20 points.
Yeah, I would agree, but not much, you know, but not much beyond that.
I would be surprised if they get to 31 points though, too. So it's a weird win.
Yeah, no doubt. But hey, we appreciate everybody joining us here for Irish Illustrated Insider. The next time we will visit with you will be in about 48 hours when O'Malley and Priester give the instant analysis pregame. Until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, thanks for joining us.